following or just be preceding anyone on this occasion, mm-hmm. I became a member of the Women's Social Political Union. And you became a member by signing an application blank and giving 25 cents. And I remember I was so thrilled by getting, I still remember my thrill, getting a letter from Mrs. Mabel Tuke, the national treasurer, I think she was, of the organization, a beautiful letter welcoming me into their ranks and thanking me for my 25 cents and so on. And I was so extremely happy to get to really be a part of it. So then I began to go to all their meetings. They had meetings every year, great meetings every week in a big hall in London. And the meetings were all, oh, so enthusiastic. So all this time then that I continued in working for the charity organization to finish that part, I took this period of training and then went back to the original place I was to go, Miss Lucy Gardner's. And I did, I guess, just about everything that was to be done there, because everything that you could do. And I learned again a great deal about a very poor working class section of London and what their mm-hmm. lives were. And I was again more and more convinced that I didn't want to be a social worker, but that I wanted to learn what life was like, many aspects as I could, and at the same time, the Quakers had a headquarters in London for their own social work in a place called Clerkenwell.
How do you spell that?
I guess it was Clerkenwell, Clerkenwell, I imagine. Anyway, it's one of the very poorest sections of London. And there was a little Quaker meeting there. Mm-hmm. Well, anyway, after a time of working here at this Charity Organization Society, then this chairman decided to resign. I don't know what she was going to do, I've forgotten. I think travel or something.
This was Lucy Gardner?
Yes, the head of my place. Mm. And so she proposed to the board, her board of directors, whatever they had, mm-hmm. that I'd be engaged in her place. And she said that I knew now all about the work and all about the district and all about how to raise money for it, and that there was nobody else she wanted to oppose. So then they considered and they said, would I agree to stay on? And I said no, I was going back to America probably next year. So then they said, well, we can't have a person take this undertaking it for some period of time. So at all events, I said, well then, I would stay and help the new person that they got, mm-hmm. and help her get started. All right, because this other lady, we had to, whatever it was that she had to go to, we had to go to pretty soon. So I did, and they finally found someone whom I like very much. Came down from somewhere up in the Midlands. I thought she was a splendid person. So we worked together for maybe a month or two until she got onto the ropes. She was the daughter of a clergyman and such a spiritual type of a person and so consecrated, really, in her mm-hmm. work. And then I thought that I didn't want to keep on I couldn't keep on as head of it because of the fact that I wouldn't stay for a little while. And so she took it over and did. And I knew everything was all right. I then thought I'd go up to the School of Economics in London and learn a little more. Mm. So I still knew I didn't know very much. And I went up and stayed at the Quaker sort of hostel that they had in London. one wonderful thing Quakers have done. That's had these places for students.
Yeah.
Every place I went, I found some hostel. Not always for Quakers, but mm-hmm. some hostel for students.
Mm-hmm.
And this one in London was run by Miss Anna Littleboy, I remember. And that was
Littleboy?
Littleboy. That was one of the most outstanding Quaker families in England.
Is that L-I-T-T-E-L-B-O-Y?
L-I-T-T-L-E, Little Boy, B-O-Y, one word. Happened to be her name. Mm-hmm. And her brother had been the head of Woodbrook before I went there.
Oh.
But he was no longer the head of Woodbrook. He had it for a few years.
Yeah.
People who were the heads of Woodbrook were unpaid honorary positions, and they would take leading Quakers, always husband and wife, who would say take it for a year or 2 years or 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
The year I was there, it was Mr. and Mrs. Braithwaite, they called them the wardens. Anyway, this Mr. Littleboy's sister was running this, in charge of this hostel, which took in students. So I became one of her students, one of her group, anyway, and went up to the School of Economics in London.
And
I went there for 2 years. That's part of the University of London, you know.
Yeah, and you...
And I didn't try and take any degree.
I
wanted to go back and take it at the University of Pennsylvania. I thought it would be more useful to take it in my own country. But I took all the courses that I... as though I'd been studying for a degree.
I see.
I remember taking a course in the history of human marriage, which...
Oh, really?
By a professor named Westermark from Denmark. And he was, at that time, I suppose, the greatest authority, certainly in England, maybe in the world, on the question of forms of human marriage. And I remember while I was there, he would depart for, say, half a year and go down to some new tribe that he'd never visited in some very remote place, for, say, Africa. I don't know where these places were.
Mm-hmm.
And sink himself into the community and learn the marriage systems.
Mm-hmm.
And then he would come back and teach us, and he would go back mm-hmm. and go to another place. And
mm-hmm.
it was a perfectly wonderful course.
Gee.
I must say, you got familiar with every possible variety of human marriage that there was. It makes you have a very good idea, too, and you don't get too excited when people want to have some other form of marriage.
Yeah, yeah, you at least know that this
is... That It's just there, yeah. Whatever they think of. They're always mm-hmm. something that you have known about.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
So I took courses like that that I couldn't get anywhere else, perhaps in the world.
What was the University of London like then? I mean, the School of Economics. Was this a fairly radical school?
Become very much so, but it wasn't then.
It wasn't then.
No. It was neither radical nor non-radical. It was the head of it was a Mr. Pember Reeves from New Zealand, and it was a very scholarly school, just like this Westermark. He wasn't advocating any extreme form of marriage, mm-hmm. you see. He was
yeah.
making you really know all the forms that mankind had been able to think of, and doing it in a very scholarly way.
Yeah.
And he's written a book, The History of Human Marriage, which we all studied, and I think I still have it here.
Hmm.
And then it was Sidney Webb. Did you ever hear of him?
Oh, yeah, I've heard of him. Can't place him. What was he?
He was a great, and Mrs. Sidney Webb. They were great authorities in the, I would say, in the, of course, in the field about economics, but really more in its practical application to the life of England. For instance, there was a great study being made while I was there, the study of unemployment.
Oh.
And Mrs. Sidney Webb, and I guess Sidney Webb too, were people who were very prominent in making that study.
Mm-hmm.
They were known to every person in England, the Sidney Webbs. Well, he was one of the professors there. And you had people, these outranking, just marvelous professors. I never heard of anybody advocating anything either radical or not radical. It was so purely scholarly.
Yeah. It was an inquiry without any...
teaching people the, whatever subject you were taking, the basic agreed upon facts in that field, I thought. I know now it's, whenever I say to people I've been to school of economics, they look with somewhat suspicion.
I have that you were at the, you were there at the School of Economics for 1908 and 09.
I guess so.
So.
See, I graduated, let me see it, School of Social Work in New York in 1906.
Yeah.
And I finished my first degree at the University of Pennsylvania, whether I took my master's or not, I can't remember, 1907.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went in the spring of 1907, about June, to London.
Mm.
Oh, I first spent my first summer over there, by the way, in Germany.
Oh, you did?
Yes.
Oh, in 1907.
Yes, but I went over. I went first to Germany. Oh. I'd gone because I had this scholarship for Woodbrook.
Yeah.
But I didn't wait till Woodbrook opened in the autumn. I went the first boat I could get, and I landed at Antwerp, and then went down to Germany, to Berlin, and spent the summer in Berlin, and I studied German all summer.
Oh. Did you say in Berlin?
Berlin, yes.
And that was primarily for language?
Well, I was primarily to see something world, I guess.
And see the
sights. But being there, I wanted, of course, to try to learn as much as I could. So from the day I started, almost, I got somebody to teach me German by talking to me. And I went to a hostel there, a student hostel, and I learned about that on the boat over. Somebody told me how she'd spent so many months or so on at the student's hostel.
Yeah.
And so I went to it. It was, again, a place I'd never should forget. It was so excellent. Oh, delightful in every way, delightful.
Hmm.
And I learned really quite a little German. I remember every morning we had a sort of church service, and we had the Lord's Prayer, and everything was in German. So I think I could still say the Lord's Prayer in German, because I learned these so, by saying them every day, you learned a great deal.
Hmm.
And then I was given a roommate, and she was a teacher of German, so I got to teach me German.
Oh, I see.
And then after a little while, I guess an American who'd been Swarthmore with me, I'm not sure. I met somebody. Well, maybe it was somebody crossing the boat, but somebody I knew over there, and she told me she was staying in a German family, and she thought I would perhaps learn more. Mm. So I went the rest of the summer to this, lived in this German family.
Oh. Did you like that?
Yes, very much. Liked them all. Very, very much.
I was, what sort of things did you visit and seek out when you were in France and in Germany? For instance, architectural examples, or did you go a lot to art museums?
No.
Or
don't think I ever went to one. I went to the opera with this second place. First place.
The German family?
Yes, the German family place, because they had young men in their there's a little what you call a pancho, and they called over there, you know, a pancho.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the loveliest young woman is the head of her business in life was to conduct this little pancho. And I remember so well the dining table, one long dining table, and some of these young men and girls, I guess they were going to operas. And so first time in my life I'd ever been to an opera, I guess.
Mm.
I went to these operas. We always stood up in the gallery because they didn't have any money.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I didn't have any money. Mm. We always stood up in the back in the operas, but it was gave you, and these young men were all in the army, all not knowing how many more years they had in life.
Mm-hmm.
So preparing for the army, had to be in the army.
Yeah.
Well, I spent that summer there, and then went over to Woodbrook in the autumn.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I've told you the Woodbrook experience.
Yeah. And that, so that would be 1907, autumn. And
then I went to Woodbrook. And I finished in the spring, be 1908.
Yeah.
And then I went first over to Paris to have this mm-hmm. little knowledge, some more knowledge of something in Europe.
Yeah.
And then 1908 went up to this Miss Lucy Gardner's charity organization work.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And that's when I began really to take a part in the suffrage movement. Then, 1908.
And then in the summer, let's see.
Well, maybe that winter I started at the School of Economics. I guess I did.
Yeah, I have here 1908 and 1909. You're in the School of Economics.
Yes, I think that
makes it right.
I went for this charity organization. Say that we stopped our work in May at the Woodbrook,
mm-hmm.
and I went over maybe as little as 2 weeks. I don't know how long in France, and then came up and spent, I suppose, all the first half of that year with this Miss Gardner, and then I must have left and gone down to. Gone up to London, gone to, it was still in London, but gone mm-hmm. to this student's hostel to begin work at the University of, at the School of Economics, I guess.
Okay. All right.
And while I was at the School of Economics, I met one girl especially, her name was Rachel Barrett, I remember, who were very ardent workers in the Women's Social Political Union, as they called it, at Mrs. Pankhurst. And I remember the first thing that I ever did, really did, was while I was still at the School of Economics. And this particular person, and I think it was this Miss Rachel Barrett, asked me if I'd go out and help her in selling their paper, Votes for Women in the Street. So I did. And I remember how very bold and good she was, and how very timid and unsuccessful I was.
Oh, really?
Standing beside her trying to ask people that like votes for women. So contrary to my nature, really. Mm-hmm. I wasn't, seemed to be very brave by nature. But I remember very well doing this day after day after day, going down from the School of Economics, where she was a student and I was a student. And other people were students. And so we would just stand out in the street wherever we were supposed to stand, on some corner, with these votes for women. It's what they did all over London. A great many of the girls in small parts of London were doing it. Then...
Did you get some hostile responses?
Well, I don't remember anything about that.
Okay.
But it did not. I didn't think I was much of a success, but I... anyway, I tried. And then they began to ask me to speak outdoors at the street corners.
Oh, really?
Naturally, they asked anybody, just as I've always tried doing our movement, to ask anybody to do anything I can get it to do.
Mm-hmm.
So all we had to do was to tell what that week this movement was doing, what they were trying to do. So I did speak, I guess, a great many parts of London, at little outdoor meetings, and indoor meetings when there was an election going on, and they would meet in the schoolhouse, perhaps, and try to get all the people in that neighborhood to come in. And the way you started, of course, they always started you by just introducing someone who was an experienced speaker, and would give you a little confidence. That you knew you didn't have to go on, you could stop in a minute and now introduce the speaker. And so that's the way I started, by introducing people.
I see.
And then after a little while, they would promote you to speaking yourself and having somebody introduce you, another New Beginner. Mm-hmm. So we go to the railroad stations and the tubes in London, what they call the tubes, is subway, mm-hmm. and in the little parks. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what we had for things to stand on, but they always had something we could stand on to be a little above the crowd.
Yeah.
So then, in a little while, I decided I wouldn't stay any longer in this friend's pension, but I'd like to try to see a little more of the life of London. So I went down to this Clerkenwell headquarters of the Quakers and rented a little tiny apartment, or room, I guess a little apartment, in Clerkenwell, in the very poorest section of London you can imagine. And I became one of their assistants in their Clerkenwell settlement. Because it was very easy, you know, having had been in settlements, they would take you in and were glad to have you, and give you classes of people you were to instruct. Do you want to go and get some lunch?
No, I'm out of ink in my pen.
Better, don't you think you better get some orange juice or something?
Yeah, why don't we do that? We're just now getting into your suffrage work, and this might be a good place to stop for a minute.
All right, I'll come on. We'll just get a glass of orange juice, because I don't want
to
stop.
Well, let me bring it in here to
all
you.
All right, I really don't want to stop, and I must get this. If we're going to do it, I must make sure you get everything you want.
Yeah.
No, if I go into too much detail, you'll stop me, will you?
You're not. It's the detail that I need, because we have the outlines and the general stuff. Okay, so you're at Clerkenwell.
Clerkenwell. So this was where the Quakers had this little sort of settlement house, a little headquarters anyway. And so then they asked me to come in and be one of their assistants there. So I did. And I had this little apartment right by, so I fixed a little tiny apartment up and made it the first little home I ever picked up. And I fixed it up, I thought, made it quite nice. I don't know whether it was one room or one floor or what, but it was just the type that people were living in there. And you had to go down to the pump in the wall. It was a built around some kind of a little center place. And there was a pump you had to get all your water from. Walk down and fill up your bucket or whatever you had.
Oh, with a handle?
No. Wasn't any handle, but I mean you had to go down with a little bucket to fill whatever you wanted to take up to your room. It's the only water we had. I can't remember about the toilet, what we had. And we just felt you were living the life. You could see what the life was of the ordinary person and all the handicaps and troubles and so on they had. And I stayed there and still kept on going up to School of Economics and doing this work with the Quakers in this little settlement, and going to all the meetings I could at the WSPU. That was sort of my life. And then I guess all that winter, that was what I did. Because it was in the spring when I was still at the School of Economics, I remember that I got a letter from Women's Social Political Union asking me if I would go on a deputation to, I suppose, the Prime Minister, whoever was the head of the person that they were going on deputation to, in Parliament, a certain date to be led by Mrs. Pankhurst, and that it would probably mean that you would be under some danger of being arrested and imprisoned, so you must not accept this invitation. She were willing to do this. Mm-hmm. I remember hesitating the longest time and writing the letter and not being able to get enough courage to post it, going up and walking around the post office wondering whether I dare put this in.
Saying yes?
To say yes, yes. And that's all you could say. If you didn't want to go, you didn't write. If you would go, well, then they wanted you to write. So I thought maybe I could go under an assumed name, which some of the people were doing. Because while I didn't object to going at all, I thought all my friends and everybody I knew would object, so save them from terrible disgrace and blot on our family escutcheon and so on. Yeah. I thought, well, I'll go under the assumed name. And finally I decided I wouldn't do that. So at last I got up enough courage to post my letter saying I would go. And I did go to meeting in Caxton Hall in London, which in all you'll probably come across in Sylvia's book, because all those meetings were held in Caxton Hall, close, very close to Parliament. And I must read her book again and say what she says of all these affairs. And I remember Mrs. Petit Lawrence and Christabel conducted the meeting, and they told us just what to do, where to meet, what to wear, how to act, everything. And then we'll say the next day we met. And Mrs. Pankhurst led the procession. I imagine there were about 100 people, but I'm not sure how many. And we marched, not really marched, but we just walked through the streets of London from Caxton Hall, very close, up to Parliament. And there we were stopped, and we were all arrested and taken to the, I think it was Bow Street police. Seems to me it was Bow Street, but I'd have to look up, anyway, to a police station that the suffragists were always taken to when they went to Parliament. And that's where I met Lucy Burns, because I'd never known of her, heard of her. You know who she was, don't you?
Yeah.
So she was a student in Bonn University in Germany, and I guess she was gone over on a vacation to England.
Oh.
I imagine it was. But anyway, she heard of this deputation, and she was always much more valiant than I, about 1,000 times more valiant than I, by nature, I think. So she wanted to go right away on this deputation. So she had a little United States flag of some type on her suit, and so I went up to her to introduce myself, and we were the only two Americans there. So we became very good friends and continued all our lives until she sort of melted away in the last part of our campaign. But from that time on in England, we saw a great, great deal of each other. Well, this deputation was, bail was given to everybody on it by Mr. Patrick Lawrence, who was a very wealthy man. So we put up the bail for everybody. And I remember his talking to me and said, here in the police station, and he said, now would we be sure to be there when the time was appointed for us to come to be sentenced? We were just released on bail. And I said, well, I remember so well. It's funny how you remember some things and others you don't. But I never thought it was from that day to this. I remember this. And I guess I've never thought of it since. He sat down beside each person and said, now I'm leaving this Monday, and you to be a certain such a date. And I said, but you know, I have a return ticket for America on the boat going such a date, which is before the time that I'd have to be there. And he said, well, and the only thing you can do, I guess, is to cancel your return ticket, because this is, by order of the court, you have to appear at this time. So I did. I canceled my return ticket to America. And then, somehow or other, this group never was called for sentence. Of course, they were very arbitrary. They did what they wanted. Maybe it was such a large group that they didn't want to start and put all these people in prison, whatever the purpose was. They finally announced that they wouldn't, that the case was dismissed. But then, since I had, and I was at the School of Economics when this letter arrived, but it was just about the end of the term, and that's the reason I got my ticket to go home.
Oh, yeah.
But since I had sent in my name for this deputation, they supposed, of course, I might be willing to help in any of their militant efforts. So immediately, never failed. Everything that they got up from that time after it was of a militant nature, they always sent me a note saying, would I take part? So almost immediately, they were going to have a meeting in Bermondsey to protest against one of the members, Lloyd George, it was, to protest against Lloyd George's speech, which he was making as a member of the cabinet, in that it would be. He was participating in the general opposition, of course, to the suffrage measure. They all were. The cabinet was united against us. As far as you could tell, they were united. Mm-hmm. They took a stand against us. So I went down, being asked to go, to speak. Imagine, I knowing hardly anything about speaking at all. And a group of people were asked to speak. That's all we did, to go outside the meeting and have a protest meeting.
I see.
But you didn't have to, I learned then that you didn't have to be an eloquent speaker, as I thought you might have to be, and I know I would never be. So, anyway, I agreed to go, to make one more. And the person who got up to speak first was instantly arrested. And then the next one that she would introduce was instantly arrested. So when it came my time to get up and make a speech, my heart was calm and serene because I knew I wouldn't have to make the terrible speech, which was the thing that would worry me more than anything else. So I was immediately arrested. And that's the first time I was in prison. But this time...
What was the name of the town?
It was part of London, Bermondsey.
Oh.
Bermondsey, one of the industrial poor sections of London.
Okay.
I may have some of these things wrong, you see, but I'd have to refresh my memory, but I think it was in Bermondsey.
All right.
So then we all were taken to the police station, and were not let out on bail at all, and were convicted and sentenced to prison, we'll say, for 2 weeks or something, maybe a month. It wasn't any very long period. So from that time on, I really did participate, I guess, almost entirely in the, I guess about everything I did was from that time on in the suffrage movement.
Well, after you had...
And I remember that Mrs. Pankhurst was going up to Scotland to get up what they hoped would be a very large procession to the streets of Edinburgh to start the movement there. And she invited Lucy Burns and myself, two Americans, the only two Americans perhaps that ever have taken part in the movement, to drive up with her, which we were both of us very happy that she asked us to do it. And
why did she want her? Was it because she wanted Americans or just because you and Lucy have been doing so well?
I don't know. I suppose she was going on this tour and wanted to take some people along, and maybe we just come to her attention in some way or other. Mm-hmm. Don't know why she asked us to go, but we both were overjoyed to be asked. And I remember she had a woman chauffeur, and this was something absolutely unheard of. Nobody had ever seen a woman chauffeur.
Oh, isn't that amazing?
It was unusual for a woman to drive a car, but to have a woman chauffeur. So she was quite a feature of the little expedition. Mm-hmm. Only Mrs. Pankhurst, Lucy Burns, and myself, and this woman chauffeur. And then we would stop at meetings along the way. Great meetings had been arranged for Mrs. Pankhurst, and she would make one of her great speeches to enormous crowds. And then we'd go on to the next stopping place where she'd make another speech. But what she wanted, what they wanted to do was to organize this procession, and I think that Mrs. Pankhurst thought maybe we could help her organize it. That we both were going back to America, and we had no particular ties in England. And so when we got there, got up to Edinburgh. Have you ever been in Edinburgh?
No.
One of the most beautiful streets you can think of, Princess Street, goes from, I think, what they call the castle, an old castle, down to an equally historic place. It's between two very historic places. And they opened headquarters there under Mrs. Pankhurst. And she had an assistant called Flora Drummond. They always called her General Drummond, who managed managed everything. Sort of.
I'm sorry, what was her first name?
Flora, F-L-O-R-A. So sad, you know, not to keep up all your connections with these people that were all so wonderful, that you think were so wonderful. And so she asked me, and I think maybe Lucy Burden, I can't remember, but anyway, she asked me to go down to a meeting at Berwick-on-Tweed. And by the way, that's another thing Mr. Gallagher asked me about. It must be in one of these books. It
must be in one of the books, then.
A meeting by Sir Edward Grey, and who's a member of the cabinet. And we were not supposed to go outside and make a meeting, but to go inside and ask a question of him as to why the government was obstructing the enfranchisement of women or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I remember that the person, I was always just sent along, you know, as a little girl assistant to somebody important, and this person was put in charge of this. I hope I can think of her name. Her husband was one of the foremost journalists in Great Britain. And in the meeting in Great Britain, previously, in the meeting in London, where various women had gotten up and asked questions and been thrown out of the meeting,
mm-hmm.
there was a man named Henry Nevison. Did you ever hear of him? Mm-hmm. He's written a book on, I think, not exactly on this topic, but on the related ones. Anyway, he was the foremost newspaper man in England, one of the foremost. And he got up in great indignation when all these women were being thrown out and made a public protest.
Mm.
And then there was another newspaper man who got up, followed him and got up and did the same. Probably I'll think of her name and his name. So his wife was up in London, up in Edinburgh, helping Mrs. Pankhurst. And she was sent down with me to Berwick-on-Tweed.
I see.
And she was to make the speeches, and I was to help her by introducing her.
I see.
And so on. So for 1 week we stayed there, and every night we went out and spoke in the street corners of Berwick-on-Tweed, in the marketplace or someplace where people assembled.
Mm-hmm.
And this was to acquaint the people of the town with the why we were protesting against Sir Edward Grey. And then when the meeting came, I think she went back to London, and I stayed on, and whether Lucy Burns was there or not, I can't remember, but it seems to me she was. But at all events, I know that when the meeting was in full sway, and Sir Edward Grey was talking about their great principles, I just was told what I was to do, so I did it. Tried to. And I was supposed to get up and say, well, these are very wonderful ideals, and so on, but couldn't you extend them to women, or something like this.
Mm-hmm.
And when I did this, with great timidity, I'm sure, anyway, I got it out enough so that I was heard. And the police immediately took me by the arms and right out of the meeting. And I remember I was most indignant. They conducted me all through the streets of Berwick-on-Tweed to the police station, holding my hands behind me, and I don't know whether with handcuffs or with what. So I was I remember so blazingly angry. And
they made you walk through the streets?
Yes, like, take me to be to be arrested in the police station.
Yeah.
Or be booked or whatever you did. So then I was arrested and I was charged with whatever I was supposed to be charged with. And then the meeting was over. And I guess Sir Edward Grey must have said, well, don't go forward with any prosecution of anybody or something like that, because then I was released. So, having done this little chore, Mrs. Drummond asked Lucy Burns and me to go together up to East Fife to arouse East Fife on this subject. And see, what was the name of that town? Dundee. So we sent to Dundee. And we went out from Dundee into all the neighboring little towns, and they were so interesting, these experiences. And we usually spoke on the street corners, and they hardly ever had indoor meetings, and it was in the summer. And then there was to be a meeting by Winston Churchill, a great meeting, I think it was, in Dundee, in a great hall in Dundee. And so we were asked to get up a meeting outside of protest, which we undertook to do. And we did. We got up the meeting, and we were both arrested, and we both in prison, both, and I don't know for how long, but we both of us put in Dundee prison. And then when we came out, a very lovely woman named Miss McGregor, who lived in one of these beautiful Scots estates outside of Dundee, invited, and who was a great supporter of this movement, invited us to come out and be her guests and recuperate.
Ah.
So we went, both of us. And I remember when we got there, we were far out in the country, and Lucy Burns and I thought we would go out for a walk. And Miss McGregor was very much embarrassed, and she said, you know, no lady goes out without having a hat and a coat and gloves and so on, and I wouldn't want anybody to go out from my house and without being properly gowned. So we gradually learned all the right customs and could perform to them, I guess, all right. And this was an inn town called Inverkeeler.
Inverkeeler,
I think.
How would you spell that?
I'll have to look these things up. I may find them in Sylvia's book.
Yeah.
I think it was Inverkeeler, something like that. That's the name of her town.
Okay.
And the name of her house was Abbeythune. Abbeythune. Maybe that was the little village she lived in.
Okay.
But anyway, we spent maybe 2 or 3 weeks there as her guests. And then we went back to Edinburgh, where the procession was being gotten up, and that's the time they sent us over to Glasgow, which you read to me.
Yes. And that's where you had, you were arrested again.
Yes. We were arrested there, but they didn't prosecute the case.
Yeah.
I remember they didn't. The only time I went to prison in England was in Dundee. Mm-hmm. I mean, in Scotland was in Dundee.
Did you, up here where you were going into the Sir Edward Grey meeting, how did you get inside the hall for that?
Where?
The meet?
Berwick on Tweed?
Yeah. How did you get inside the hall for that?
Well, they were public meetings. People could always
You could
go
just
in.
Walk in.
Yes. Okay. So then the procession came off, and we, both Lucy Burns and I, spent our time helping in every way we could and getting it up, doing all the things you have to do to get up a big procession. It was a great success. Ah. The procession was very beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And then, when it was over, we went back to London.
Any arrests on the procession?
No. There were no arrests at all. It was just a beautiful procession to the street. There was no opposition. I suppose they had a permit.
Mm-hmm. And that
the only time we were ever arrested was when there was some protest against the members of the cabinet.
No.
Well, then when we went back to London, in the autumn, as I recall it, now I might find more in Sylvia's book, but the first thing we were asked to do, Lucy Burns and I, was to go to the meeting of the Lord Mayor in London, which is held every year with some celebrity, and to ask probably the Prime Minister, but whoever was speaking, again, about why they were holding up the separatist movement. And I'll have to read more about it, because as far as I can remember, Lucy Burns was asked to dress up and go as a guest, and they got a ticket for her in some way, and to get up and interrupt the meeting. I don't remember whether she did or not, but she said she was always very courageous. I suppose she did. I don't remember, though. And I was asked to go in as a charwoman, and in the morning,
with Amelia
when all the charwomen were going in, and go up where the gallery was, and call down to make sure that if the lady down on the floor didn't get her words heard, at least they'd hear. Nurse, maybe her name was Brown. I mean, Nurse Brown, I always called her.
Oh.
Maybe it was Amelia. But we were the two who were sent together to do this upstairs business.
Yeah.
She was a nurse.
Hmm.
And I was a student. And so we went there and spent the whole day.
As charwomen?
No, we just concealed ourselves, you know. We got in as charwomen, then we had to conceal ourselves upstairs somewhere in the loft.
Oh, I see.
And the police searched the whole building, and I remember they came in and searched just where we were crouching down.
Oh.
And they even touched my hair.
Oh, really?
But they didn't, I guess they thought it was something else. So they didn't discover us. So we stayed there all through this day.
Were you in a closet or something?
No, we were just, some loft.
Oh.
Over the...
Up over a ceiling.
Up over the building. And it was not adjoining the place the Lord Mayor was meeting was, but it was on next to it. So we were supposed to break a window and call down, because we couldn't... The place right above would be too thoroughly guarded, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Probably they thought. So we stayed there all day. And then I suppose Nurse Brown called down too. I don't remember a single thing excepting myself. So I called down what I was supposed to call down, and the police came rushing up and arrested us. She probably did the same. And whether Lucy Burns ever made her speech and saw the floor, I don't know. I suppose she did, but I don't remember, because I don't think she was in prison with me. But anyway, Nurse Brown and I were in prison, I think, for about a month.
Wow.
And that's the time I think they started forcible feeding. I'm not quite sure. Mm-hmm. But anyway, we served out our sentence.
I think they say in here that it was, that forcible feeding was, that you had to undergo forcible
feeding. It was started
feeding
at a certain time, and I think it was then. I don't think it ever was in the previous one that I can recall.
Mm-hmm.
So, then when I came out, I was invited by a very nice Jewish family. Belong to this movement, to come to their house and recuperate. I was supposed to be very ill, apparently, because I was a very frail and fragile person anyway. I suppose I looked more ill than I was. So I went to this home. It was lovely, very cordial and warm and generous people. And I stayed there maybe 2 weeks. I remember Mrs. Pankhurst came to see me there, and various people connected with the movement came to see me. And then I got finally my passage home and returned.
Yeah, I have it.
I don't know whether I've told you all these episodes or whether there were some others I've forgotten.
Well, the one you just told me, according to Sylvia Pankhurst, took place in November, I guess, of 1909.
I came home in January 1910.
Yeah. Now, what was your treatment like in the jails and prisons that you were in?
Oh, they just paid no attention to us. You were just locked up and you were in solitary confinement. You never saw anybody you're not given anything to read. You just left alone. Nobody paid any attention to you whatsoever.
Good heavens. Did you get plenty to eat?
Get what?
Did you get plenty to eat?
Well, we were forcibly fed, you see. We didn't eat anything.
And what about in the other jails that you had been in?
I don't
know. You had this other sentence that you had to serve. And you said you were sentenced for a short while after your protest against Lloyd George. And I just...
About two weeks, I think, maybe a month, but not very long.
I just wondered if there was any...
But I don't remember thinking, you know, I'm not very... I still today don't know much about food.
Yeah.
Or think much about it or care much about it. So I don't remember a thing about the food. I guess it was all right.
Did you go on a hunger strike in any of these? Apparently some of them. That was one of the strategies that
they
used.
Well, the hunger strike was the reason we were forced to be fed.
Yeah.
Wouldn't be in other words. And I don't recall whether we went on a hunger strike before. I know we did the last time, but whether we ever did before or not, I don't know. Whenever they adopted finally as a policy, which they did, of asking all the prisoners to the Women's Political Union, would say, now, if you want to go, we want you to hunger strike or not go. And so you went in without understanding when they adopted that policy. And I think the policy was probably just before, I think it was after we were imprisoned in Dundee, because I don't recall that we hunger struck in Dundee. We might have, but I can look it up and see.
Yeah.
Whenever it was, we did.
Yeah.
So that's the end of England. I think I've told you most of the things that happened.
I think you have. There's a note I picked up somewhere that you were in the summer... Before this summer, you were a resident worker for the Christian Social Union Settlement of Hoxton, London?
Yes, Hoxton, that's right.
Did we cover that? Did you tell me about that?
Well, when I was staying with this Miss Lucy Gardner in the charity organization work, I told you, first month I didn't stay with her because I went up to have this training, the same month. Maybe I got there about July or June or when.
Mm-hmm.
And then... Then, after staying with her a little while, and I learned all about the Dalston region because I went over it all with my bicycle. I must tell you one other thing. While I was going over the place with my bicycle, going everywhere, full of confidence and everything, which I still retain, I don't seem to learn much through ages going by, but then I came out from visiting one family, and there my bicycle was gone. So I had to walk home, and I never had a bicycle from then on. I had no fear because I'd read so many tales about Scotland Yard. So I thought, well, Scotland Yard will find it for me. But Scotland Yard never did.
Oh.
I don't think they took any interest in finding it.
Hmm.
But.
Oh, dear. And how did you walk everywhere after that? How did you get around?
After that, I walked all the way, every place.
Gee.
Maybe they had some little buses, I don't remember.
Hmm.
Of course, it was one little section, you know, not an enormous section you covered.
Yeah.